Chapter 48. Ignite. There was silence in the house. Breathe in, breathe out. Look inside yourself, circulate your chi. Time passed. I was actually sitting down and meditating. At first, I tried using the lessons that had been taught to Zhou, the very basics he had been taught by Gramps. They weren't working very well. I tried to do a chi circulation like Zhou's memories told me how, yet my chi refused to budge. Sure, it was moving, slowly. But when I tried to speed it up to the speed it was supposed to go, it was like pushing against a wall or a mountain. In fact, when I tried to use anything that Zhou had been taught, I got an odd twinge deep in my stomach, and then nothing. I also had a rather severe feeling that if I tried to force the issue, things would get unpleasant. So I didn't. I had no real desire to push it anyways. It was idle curiosity. So now I was just sitting around and trying to feel at peace. Holy hell, this is boring. How the hell do cultivators do this all day? Gojen finally exploded, mirroring my thoughts. It's so goddamned boring. I laughed at Gojen's annoyance, opening my eyes. Yunzhen opened his eyes as well, breathing out and stretching. He flopped over onto his back, irritated. It was just after breakfast, and we were already meditating. Up and at it first thing in the morning, trying to get a handle on their chi. Lots and lots of boring meditation. I had thought I was through with it. We were 2 days into this, and the Song brothers were already getting fed up with trying to meditate to find their chi. Zhou's memories told me that it would take a while to fully come to grips with one's chi using the method that his Gramps, had taught me. He had just called it the basics, and it required a lot of meditating and centering yourself, techniques that didn't seem to be working so well for either brother. Father and Che had gone home after the revelation of the amount of the Song brothers' chi, though Xian looked unsurprised. They had their own things to do, the main thing being to prepare for the wedding. They couldn't stay here and just watch the not-yet cultivators sit around. Just having chi alone didn't make one a cultivator. A lot of people had chi. I'd probably even go so far as to say everybody in this world had at least a little. People were a little bit hardier, faster, stronger, and more skilled than your average Joe back home. But that was all. Most people couldn't do anything truly crazy. There were, well, I hesitate to call them biological differences between cultivators and mortals, but that was essentially what they were. First was the meridians. In your average person, they were so small they were nearly non-existent. In a cultivator, those thin, tiny branches began to expand to accommodate the growing amount of chi you possessed. Essentially, they'd transform from something like capillaries to veins and arteries. The second portion was the opening or ignition of the Dantian. Getting into the initiate's realm was often called the lighting of the golden stove. Again, in your average person, the Dantian was basically a small pool of chi. With the first stage of the initiate's realm, your Dantian became something more. Honestly, it was kind of like a fusion reactor. Hit critical mass of chi in your Dantian, and it starts a self-sustaining reaction. Or if you received some sort of revelation, it would ignite, even if you didn't have much chi. The Song brothers' Dantians were starting to light. Like an engine backfiring, it flooded their systems, which was why their power was intermittent. And for the most part, it wasn't actually increasing their strength. The bows and sticks breaking were from reinforcement overload. The wild, unconstrained chi damaged the tools they were using when they got too excited. Well, let's take a break, I decided. We have things to do. Big D, everyone ready to go? The rooster bowed his head. I grinned and stood. It was time. The buckets and spigots were prepared, as were the fire pits and cauldrons. It was the perfect cycle of temperatures, above freezing during the day and below freezing at night. 'Twas that most magnificent of times, the sugaring season. We put on our winter clothes and began our trek into the forest, weighted down by both our supplies and a fish in a jar. The air was crisp and clean, and I was eager to get started. I could almost taste it. The grove of the maples was as beautiful as it had been, even covered in snow instead of flush with red. I pressed my hand against the tree and let my chi gently flow into it. Like with the spirit herbs, I was delicate, else I risked damaging it. I could feel the sap pumping, the lifeblood of the 100-year-old maple coursing upwards as it started to wake from its winter rest. I readied my hand drill, the bit just the right size. "Now, the trick with this, as all things, is to do it in moderation," I narrated for the benefit of my disciples. "If you go too deep, you can hurt the tree, and you won't get anything if you kill it. A little hole like this won't hurt the tree. We'll give it some compost and patch up its wound later as thanks for helping us out." The drill bit was coated with my chi and bit into the tree swiftly, going no more than 2 inches under the bark. I pulled out the bit, and the sap immediately began flowing. I moved fast, shoving the tap into the hole, no hammer required, and put the bucket underneath. Some trees drip when tapped. Some produce a surprising stream. This one gushed. It sounded like a river had just been released. I handed the hand drill to Yun Zhen next. And so we tapped the trees. Big D precisely poked a hole with one of his talons and then bowed his head in respect. Tigger cut in with her claws. I couldn't see what Peppa did, but there was a neat little hole in the tree where she stood, and Chunky gently managed to push in the spigot. The only one who was left out was Washy, who leapt up to attach himself to one of the already put-in taps. Peppa caught him out of the air, then slapped him on the ground a couple of times for his cheek. He grudgingly knocked in a tap with his tail after I picked up his jar. There were 20 trees in all, and by the time we got back to the first, after about 20 minutes, the bucket was already almost full. And now for tradition. A mug of the good stuff, straight from the tree. It was nearly ice cold. Everybody got a bit, though Chunky's cup was closer to a trough. Our cups clinked together, and we drank. Hell yeah, that's delicious. I almost preferred maple sap to maple syrup, especially when it was this cold. A little sweet, a little woody. Hey, don't knock it till you try it. But there was one thing that having the trees basically pissing into your buckets was bad for. Rest. I was originally planning on getting the sap and then sending the Song brothers off to meditate again, but right now we had to hustle or else the buckets would overflow and spill out the sap onto the ground. We had to dump our hauls into a barrel I had, and then that went straight to the big old cauldron. I kickstarted things with my secret boil water technique. Truly a frightening and overpowered ability. Destroy mountains? Nah, I could easily clean my clothes and heat up baths. The Song brothers sat down when they could, but neither of them seemed to be able to muster the concentration to meditate. Eventually, I started getting a little tired of keeping the sap boiling, so we built a big old fire and went to bed. We worked in shifts throughout the night to keep it going as the sap stopped flowing. We even had a little bit of syrup that night. We spread it out onto the snow so it turned into a sticky, taffy-like substance. I think I teared up a little when the sweet, savory taste hit my tongue. The next day was insane. It's easy to underestimate just how much sap can come out of a tree from one small tap. The trees were producing so much of the stuff, it was ridiculous. I had to keep checking that I hadn't screwed up and was somehow hurting them. But as far as I could tell, they were just flowing like a river. We filled up one cauldron and then had to start collecting every damn pot, wok, and jar I had. There were little fire pits all over the place, and I was running out of storage. Fires had to be tended, sap had to be gathered, and the final product had to be filtered and put away. I had a hand on 2 cauldrons. The day seemed to flow by like sap as we worked, all of us together. Chunky carried barrels, Big D fanned the flames, Tigger managed to boil her own pot's worth of syrup with chi alone. There was something so gratifying about the toil, the sweat, the bone-deep ache of exhaustion. The next day, thankfully, the sap didn't pour out faster. The fires burned relentlessly, and we all worked as if in a trance, like we were almost meditating. I felt like I had in the early days, when I'd first started up the farm, zoning out and working. Wait. I looked to the Song brothers as they worked, chopping wood and feeding fires. Their faces were serene. Well, it might be close enough. For over a week, they toiled without cease. They toiled alongside their master. Bidi was ecstatic. He was being useful to Faram. They all were. Even Washi had his role. He had captured fish for their supper, and they were only slightly chewed on. Bedi's heart was full of joyful camaraderie. The disciples of Faram worked as one to harvest this great treasure, a gift of the land and trees, the land that was rousing to wakefulness after its long sleep. His great master's chi drenched the earth, filling all with his glory. It was all Bidi could do not to weep. Brother Chunki did weep, oinking happily as he was loaded with sap and given a task of great importance. Bidi observed the human disciples while they toiled along with his great master. They were silent, deep within the throes of an awakening. Like guttering candles, they sparked and spluttered, throwing sparks everywhere. But as they toiled, those sparks stopped being so random. Their movements became smoother. It was at the end of the ninth day that Yun Zhen paused and let out a gasp, staring at his hands in wonder. A small spark ignited into a fire.
I have it! I have it!
He shouted with joy and leapt up into the air with far more force than he'd intended. He yelped in shock as he slammed into the great master's golem, the general that commands the winter. Not an hour later, the other shouted with surprise. Bidi bowed his head at their accomplishment. That night, there was a celebration as the human brothers played with their chi, marveling at its feel. But while they were happy, the great master's smile was tinged with worry. Bidi understood why. Now came the time for a choice. It was over dinner that his great master proposed a question, cutting through their joy and enthusiasm at ascending past their limits. "So, what do you intend to do now?" the great master asked. Douzhen looked stunned by the question. Yun Zhen paused, appearing equally as concerned. "You have power now, more power than most men will ever have. Any army in the land would fall over themselves to have you. A sect in the Azure Hills would be sure to allow you to join. Wealth and power are at your fingertips. So, what will you do?" The humans paused, mulling over the great master's profound question. "You don't need to answer right now, but you do need to think it over." The great master rose and went out to tend to the fire. The brothers went out to sit upon the veranda. Bidi followed them and observed. He made no particular effort to hide himself, but so distracted were the brothers that they did not notice him. Their chi roiled underneath their skin, rocking with turmoil and indecision. The brothers sat in silence together. "So," Yun Zhen began, staring up at the moon, "you could be a great general of the heavens now." His brother let out an awkward chuckle.
"You could go and be the master of 1,000 sword styles. Get a harem of 1,000 women, too."
They lapsed into silence again.
"Fuck,"
Yun Zhen declared.
"Fuck,"
his brother agreed.
"None of the cultivators in the stories feel bad about this kind of stuff, do they? They always just go for it.
They say ambition is a virtue."
There were several wet, slapping sounds as Washi flopped out of his trough, then a splash as he entered the river, no doubt leaving a bunch of fish-shaped watermarks on the floor like he always did. They heard Jin grumble about it from inside. Yun Zhen laid back, staring at the sky.
"Having 1,000 women sounds like entirely too much work. Could you imagine 2 of them like Mei Mei or that Sholan chick? Or someone like Mom? You'd be dead in a week, chi or not."
Gojen barked out a laugh.
"I don't think I want to kill anybody,"
Gojen said in a quiet voice.
"Beat somebody up, sure, but—"
The wind sent a slight, chilling breeze across their skin.
"I've got a job to do this summer anyway. Something that will help the village," Gojen mused.
His brother nodded.
"Gramps asked me to come up and help him this summer, and Dad said I should go."
Gojen nodded.
"Well, there's always next year to become a general or a swordmaster," he declared.
Yun Zhen shrugged.
"Or the year after that. Besides, if I have to try and meditate one more goddamn time, I'm gonna go nuts."
"To nothing changing,"
Gojen muttered, amused.
"To nothing changing," his brother sighed.
Bidi felt amusement as the turmoil settled. Their minds were made up, at least for now. They had chosen wisely. The great master would receive them with joy, and he, their senior, would protect the junior disciples. The brothers sat outside for a while longer and began playing with their chi again. It was inexpert,
but they were disciples, so they should know one of their most important duties. He cast out his chi and touched their own. Both men jumped at the sensation as they met his might. He brushed them gently, as to not hurt them, their paltry chi wavering even at just his attention. Bidi guided their chi down, down into the earth. Their eyes went blank as he shaped their little tendrils of power, their senses traveling with Bidi's own. He guided them. He guided them to the truth of the land. Little strands of golden energy stirring from its slumber. The first gasps of spring, the land waking up. He impressed upon them the most basic of the master's profound wisdom. Their eyes widened as they beheld the blessed land in all its glory. We give to the land, and the land gives back.